Someone will be debuting as a new All Blacks coach, and it's going to be announced, I think, before Christmas, which feels like quite a tight timetable, Brendan Telfer. Good morning.
Good morning, Catherine. Yes, I know that's normally the case. Within 2 or 3 months of the departure of the incumbent, they put the process in place pretty quickly. And already this week, in a real change for the New Zealand Rugby Union, who have often been accused down through the decades of conducting too much of their business in private, announced, first of all, that they've approached 26 candidates or coaches, asking them if they'd like to apply for the job. And then they named the 26 that they've approached, which was a very interesting list indeed. People like John Mitchell and Robbie Deans, who coached the All Blacks unsuccessfully at the World Cup 12 years ago, have been asked to reapply. It would seem to be highly unlikely that those two or either of them would get a look in, but you never know. Robbie Deans and John Mitchell seems well ensconced with the English team anyway at the moment. Wayne Smith, another name on that list, who's well and truly retired from selection and coaching. But I think many of the names on the list of the 26 are seen by the New Zealand Rugby Union at the moment as potential coaches, and therefore maybe there's a role for them as an assistant to the new head coach. And Wayne Smith, I guess, would fit into that category. He was very successful as an attacking coach for Steve Hansen, and they clearly feel he still has got plenty to offer to the game here. And no Warren Gatland or no Dave Rennie on the list, which is interesting. So if you shake the list down, there's basically, well, I look at it anyway, there's three favourites that emerge, and all of them have got a lot of support at the moment. Scott Robertson, Ian Foster and Jamie Joseph. Ian Foster, of course, has been assistant to Steve Hansen, and many felt, including me, that when England beat New Zealand a couple of weeks ago in the semi-final, that probably Ian Foster's chances or disappeared down the drain at that time. But he continues to get strong support publicly from Steve Hansen and some other big hitters as well, like Buck Shelford, and I imagine Hansen's advocacy will count for plenty within the appointment committee. And if the New Zealand Rugby Union decides they wish to continue with their continuity coaching model, which they've had in place now for 12 years, and you could argue that it's been very successful in that time, we've won 2 of the 3 World Cups, if that's the case, you would think Foster will get the job. Jamie Joseph, the miracle he worked with Japan at the World Cup recently, suggests that that in itself might be enough to get him the job. He's a very popular coach, very fair-minded, no-nonsense kind of guy, not dissimilar, I guess, in some ways to Steve Hansen. But he also brings with him Tony Brown, and the two other candidates who are really in this race, Foster and Robertson, have also approached Tony Brown as a potential assistant. So he's in big demand, but he's decided he'll stick with Jamie Joseph. So that's a formidable duo who really will be in the race, I think, right to the finish line. And then there's Scott Robertson, who many believe, because of what he's done with the Crusaders, with 3 titles he's won with them now, and also had the New Zealand under-20 side, and he's youthful, he's different, he can be slightly eccentric at times, a far cry from the traditional sort of mould of All Black coaches, but it could be just the time for someone youthful, someone different. He connects well with the players. He doesn't have any international coaching experience offshore, but what he does have is he's coached many senior All Blacks over a number of years now with the Crusaders, and so therefore he coaches them clearly well, because you just look at the record of the Crusaders under his guidance. So he also is in the race. So it's a very tight race. It's a 3-horse race, and I wouldn't like to pick one at the moment, although
who are you going for?
I'd go for Scott Robertson.
I'm going for Jamie Joseph with Tony
Brown
as the deputy. And I'll tell you why. He's got the 2 strands. He had a success with the Highlanders, and then he's taken, an okay but normally under the fold in the paper team at a full World Cup and really done some giant killing at
that. That's right, to get
and,
Japan.
And also, I do like is that Tony Brown made his choice. He said, I'm not going to float around being available to whoever wants me. I'm
yes,
picking my guy.
Yeah.
And the doubt I have about Robertson is twofold, and I don't follow things closely enough to even really proffer an opinion, but I'm going to. Yes, he's been successful with the Crusaders, but so have so many coaches of Canterbury-based teams over so many decades, and he's just not been tested in a second arena the way Jamie Joseph has. And that's the difference between those two. And I think Foster's, I know the continuity thing, I get all that argument, but times are changing, and I think Foster's chances just took a smashing with that semi-final.
Yes, I thought that immediately after the match as well, but you can't ignore the strong advocacy coming from Steve Hansen, who carries a lot of clout around the corridors
of the New Zealand Rugby Union. Yeah, but he didn't win it, did he? He didn't win it, and he didn't make the final.
No, but he has been involved in two successful World Cups under the continuity model, and he's a big, strong believer in that. And I can see where he's coming from, the idea that if you groom one of your assistants, they immediately know all of the systems, all of the things that a new coach has to spend time learning. So there's an advantage there in that as well. The players seem to get on well with Foster's a very likeable guy. Maybe I would think maybe the one thing that might not work in his favour is he's too nice a guy. You need someone with a bit of attitude.
Here's the
there.
Other thing. The strategy. The strategies have been successful, and their strategies plural, and I still have my doubts about that first five and fullback combo.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
I think that got shown up when they were against the wall. But here's the thing. You could argue it was strategy that got England through that match, and ironically, then they couldn't deliver against South Africa. It's a time where the fundamental rethinking of how you go about winning a tournament, there's kind of a shift underway. Like, I mean, our All Black model had proved very successful for over a decade. It took a long time to develop it. It began with some early failures. Remember the rotation. And then rotation, frankly, has just about become the thing. So I just think it's kind of one of those tipping points, those changing points where they've had a tremendous era, but maybe a different set of eyes and a completely original way of coming at things is due.
Yeah, just a fresh voice, a fresh face. And so I think Joseph and Robertson, regardless of which one of those two gets it, will be a very popular choice. The rugby union, if they go with Foster, will also have to expect, and they will get plenty of criticism for sticking with the old guard. So it's interesting. As I said, the three of them have got support. Three of them have got pretty good, very good CVs. We'll just have to sit and wait.
Who would be the rank outsider, the sort of shock?
Mitchell? I don't think there's much between the three, to be perfectly honest, because, as I said, I think there is solid support for Foster from important places. Joseph, the miracle he worked with Japan, as I said, in itself probably is enough to get him the job. And then you throw in Tony Brown, and it's a formidable kind of presentation he will make. And Robertson, probably the popular choice amongst rugby fans in New Zealand.
Yeah, well, so, we shall see. There might be a shock outside. I mean, everyone wanted Joe Schmidt a few months ago, didn't they? But then he was unavailable.
Exactly.
But we shall see. A really, really interesting time. And of course, just the news that was sort of the worst kept secret. So many have retired out of that All Black side, but Sonny Bill Williams, goodness, what a contract that is.
Yes, it's been confirmed today by the Wolfpack, a club owned by the Australian mining tycoon David Argyle, that they have signed Sonny Bill Williams. They're not talking about any figures, of course, but it's generally believed that the deal is worth $10 million over 2 years. It's a peculiar kind of arrangement they have with the status, with the salary cap in the rugby league competition he's playing in Europe, that only the first 300,000 of his salary will count towards the club's salary cap. After that, they can pay him what they like. But and Sonny Bill saying all the right things today. The club has big ambitions and big goals, and I want to be part of all of this and do all I can to help reach these lofty goals. And I imagine the size of the cheque was probably as important as anything, but you can't blame him. 34 years of age, not a bad payday he's got coming up for the next couple of years.
Yeah, all right. To the Melbourne Cup. Now, it sort of had plenty of controversy around it, but did that matter to the, you know, the really dedicated punters? What did you make of what happened?
Well, on the surface, maybe not. But when you dig down, you see that there's criticism coming from many quarters. The Victorian Racing Club are being assailed from all sorts of quarters, chiefly, of course, about the treatment of horses that run in the race. And they can't deny the fact, of course, that six deaths have occurred either in or from horses that have raced in the Melbourne Cup since 2013. And so protests from the animal welfare activists are getting louder and stronger every year, and they were given a big boost about a month ago when ABC television, you may recall, ran some footage of thoroughbred horses being brutally slaughtered in an abattoir in Queensland. And this clearly seems to have had an impact. I mean, the television ratings were down considerably this year for the Melbourne Cup in Australia. The crowd at Flemington, although it looked to be pretty much capacity, but it holds over 100,000, was apparently the lowest crowd they've had for the Melbourne Cup day for something like 20 years. And even such anecdotal stories as office sweepstakes are down. I noticed Taylor Swift also pulled out. She was the headline entertainment act for the Melbourne Cup this year, and she pulled out because of these allegations about the treatment of horses. Even inside the racing industry in Australia, there are now calls for an independent body to be set up to care and manage the retirement of these horses rather than just shuffling them off to an abattoir. Now, whether the Victorian Racing Club, a body made up of ageing conservative males, is willing to change with the times, I think that's the issue, that the world is changing, the times are changing, attitudes have changed, and although it's sure still an iconic day on the Australian national calendar, probably the biggest sporting day of the year, the race that stops a nation, it is under some pressure at the moment to change.
And quickly, a lot of crowds getting along to the latest cricket series, the T20. Is it a goodie?
Yes, well, it surprised, I think, New Zealand cricket, and they were a bit anxious, I suppose, about bringing an England team out here for a full tour starting on the 1st of November. I mean, they arrived here with the rugby season, domestic rugby season, still going, and I guess there was a concern with the fans really wanted to go and watch international cricket at the beginning of November. Well, judging by the three matches they've played in this five-match T20 series, yes. The crowd at Hagley Oval a week ago for the first T20 match looked like something out of the World Cup in 2015, a capacity crowd there in bright sunshine to watch England win easily in that first T20 match, which surprised a lot of people because they've come here with a fairly youthful and experienced team. There's no Joe Root, there's no Ben Stokes, no Geoffrey Archer, the stars of their World Cup campaign, and so they brought a lot of younger, inexperienced players to try and blood some of them for the next T20 World Cup, which is just over a year away. New Zealand without Kane Williamson and Trent Bolt in those first three matches, but nonetheless they managed to turn the next two around and go into the match in Napier this afternoon, where there'll be another big crowd.
Great.
I think it's probably a bit of a legacy, yep, of that wonderful one-day match between New Zealand and England a few months ago, and people have been spurred along to go and see the players who played in that dramatic match, and they've been good matches. I mean, you know, T20, you don't get too upset about the result, I don't think, but it's been a chance also for some players locally here to be given an opportunity. Blair Tickner, the bowler from Central Districts, made a good fist of things the other day. So, it's a very good start to what is a very busy season for cricket fans here, because we not only have England touring here, but we've also got India and Australia, and the Black Caps go to Australia twice over the summer, and women, the White Ferns, host South Africa in preparation of the Women's T20 World Cup in Australia in February.
It's all on. I think you're right. I think it's a leftover of that amazing game. It's been a real fillip for the sport, which is great. Thanks so much, Brendan Telfer.